Somebody told me that the flu virus, which is heading around at the present moment, is in a 25-year cycle, and that if you're over 25, you won't get it. It is a lie. Or I am in weakened state. The subject I speak on today is called Jesus Claims to Be the Only Way to God. Now, let us suppose there is a young man who is in love with a girl. Let us suppose this friendship began on a chance meeting somewhere at a party, but it has developed into a deep relationship of mutual trust and love. Just let us suppose that. There are two possible ways, it seems to me, that you can describe what is going on at the present moment. His mates meet each other one day and someone says, "What's happened to Tom?" His friend said, "He's gone balmy. He doesn't chat up birds anymore. He doesn't get drunk with the blokes on Friday night. I hear he went to the art gallery last Sunday afternoon." And what's more, somebody has told me, although I don't believe it, he's actually sold his board. Now, on the other hand, if you talk to Tom, you say to him, "What's up with you?" He said, "Up? Nothing. Nothing," he said. "In fact, everything's marvellous. I've just met a marvellous person called Sally." It would never occur to him to describe what is happening to himself in the first category. He doesn't think in terms of do's and don'ts and what he's given up and what he hasn't and what he isn't allowed to do anymore. It hardly occurs to him because of the nature of the relationship he's moved into. You could try and persuade him that his old behaviour patterns were better than his present ones. You could do that, but it'd be irrelevant. To work out whether it's better to chat up birds or not to chat them up is now irrelevant. It doesn't interest him to talk in those realm of ideas anymore. If you talk to him about whether it was good to grog on Friday nights or whether it wasn't good to grog on Friday nights, he simply says, "I can't do it and be with Sally." That's all there is to it. And if you want to argue about the pros and cons of grogging on Friday night, you're beating your head up against the wall. You're actually talking at the wrong point. You need to talk to him about whether Sally is a girl he ought to spend the rest of his life with or not. And until that gets resolved, the other are peripheral, although they have been radical behaviour changes. Now, it's possible to describe Christianity, it appears to me, in terms of do's and don'ts. You can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do something else, you've got to start going to church, you've got to start doing this, you've got to start doing that. And in that area, that realm of ideas, there's wide scope for disagreement. In the area of ideas, it seems to me, your ideas are as good as mine, and neither of them might be worth a bumper. But if we're talking in the realm of what's good or what isn't good, your ideas, it seems to me, are as good as mine. However, Christians never describe Christianity in that way. And if they have, I doubt if they are Christian, for they are fundamentally in error about the understanding of what Christians understand to be Christians. It's not a series of ideas put together into a philosophy of life. It is not, I repeat, that. Christianity is a person, and it is about relationships with a person. It's not keeping a set of rules, and it's not trying to swap one set of rules for another set of rules. And I am disinclined to argue about the value of a new set of rules as opposed to an old set of rules. If you don't know the person, it is the person who is important, and it is the relationship with the person which causes me to have new behavioural standards. Those of themselves, in my judgment, it is a waste of time arguing backwards and forwards about the value of Christian behaviour as opposed to any other set of behaviour, without talking about the person. The person is Jesus of Nazareth, of the first century, that one. I don't know of any other one, but that one who was and of which we've got four good histories in the terms of Matthew, Mark, Luke and John, it is that Jesus of Nazareth who truly was and whom Christians believe is alive now through his resurrection from the dead, who will be for all times, and who makes the bold claim that he is the only way to get to God. Now, we're not used to that sort of exclusiveness, and it does come as a surprise to us to discover that Jesus says it. And because he does say it, I want to draw your attention to where he says it and why he makes that bold claim. The context in which he does this is in the Last Supper. He is there with the apostles, the 12, and he has just announced to them that he is about to leave them and that they will not be able to follow him. They are a bit unnerved at this, having thrown their lot in with him, and some of them at no small financial loss to themselves to follow him. They discover that he is about to leave them, and he announces that they will not be able to follow him where he goes. It is against this background that Jesus says, and I'm reading from John's Gospel at chapter 14, he says, "Do not let your hearts be troubled. Put your trust in God. Trust also in me. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, I would have told you, and I'm going there to prepare a place for you. If I go and prepare a place for you, I'll come back again and take you to be with me, that you may be there where I am. You know the way to the place where I am going." It is in response to this that Thomas, who I think is fairly impetuous, says, "I haven't got the faintest idea what you're talking about." I'm always glad when people say that. I've always noticed on every occasion when anyone says, "I can't understand what you're talking about," but on most occasions I haven't been able to understand what they've been talking about either. I was at a meeting of the staff workers of student bodies about 3 weeks ago, and we had a long discussion which had gone on for about a quarter of an hour, where I kept making a response to certain questions that were asked to me. I didn't really understand the question, but I didn't like to say that I hadn't understood it, for I'd asked a man to repeat it 3 times, and he had already rephrased it into 3 sets of synonyms for me, and I was beginning to think that either he or I were nuts or both. And so I answered him in the way which seemed to be the nearest stab to what I thought he might have been talking about, in the hope that if that got a good response, I might sort of get out of the fog and into the daylight. And after we'd gone backwards and forwards for a quarter of an hour, somebody else said, "I can't understand a word about what the two of you are talking about." And it was a great relief to me, because I really couldn't either. And, well, Thomas does that. He comes right out and he said, "I can't understand what you're talking about." He says, "Lord, I don't know where you're going, so how can I know the way?" Jesus answers to that, "I am the way, the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." I think that's a fairly exclusive type claim. I'll read it again. "I am the way, the truth and the life. No man comes to the Father except through me." So you say, how is it possible that Jesus can make such a claim? He goes on to say why he does. He says, "If you really knew me, you would know my Father as well. From now on, you do know him and have seen him." Philip, who I think is a bit dull, because every time I encounter him in the Bible, he seems to be making very odd, strange statements to me. He ups and says, "If only I could see God, I'd be satisfied." My blokes at Sydney Boys High have exactly the same problem. They say to me, "You ever seen God?" They feel that that is a great inhibiting idea to the fact that you ought to be Christian, the fact that I've never seen God. I said, "No, I've never seen him, but I could have if I'd been on time," which is my continuing problem in life. I cannot live in every moment of history. I never saw Queen Victoria, if it comes to that, although most of you may think I qualify. Philip says, "Lord, show us the Father, and that will be enough for us." To which Jesus immediately answers, "Don't you know me, Philip? Even after I've been with you for such a long time, anyone who has seen me has seen the Father. How is it that you say, 'Show us the Father'? Don't you believe that I am in the Father and the Father is in me? The words I say to you are not just my own, rather it is the Father living in me who is doing his work." Jesus says, there is no way for you to come to the Father because I'm the only one who really knows what he is like. I'm the only one who can tell you about the person of God. Now, I keep meeting people who say to me from time to time, "Well, I like to think about God like." Well, you can think about God any way you like, but he is not obligated to change to conform to your pattern of thinking. You can think about me as young and handsome, brilliantly witty if you like. Please do, but I'll still be the way I am. And your thinking will not cause me to be that. I don't give a hoot how you think about God. Indeed, the moment you say that, you will be talking about an idea rather than a person. And my great difficulty with most people I speak to about Christianity is that deep down they're talking about the realm of ideas rather than the realm of personalities. And they tell me what God is like, and I say, "Well, the person I've encountered is nothing like that. Where have you met this person? Tell me about your encounter with this person. Where may I read about this person you're telling me about?" But in the end, it is a figment of their imagination. It is not anybody anywhere. Now, Jesus says, "I am the only way back to God, because I am the only person who really has encountered him in such a way as to give you information which is thoroughly reliable. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father by me, because no man truly knows the Father except me and those to whom I tell him." It is the person we're speaking about. The God who I like to think about does not have existence at all. Jesus says, "The person I tell you about is one who can be spoken to, who hears, who communicates, who feels, and who cares." And he says, you cannot relate to God however you like. You may only relate to God in the way God likes. Now, I think that's absolutely crucial, although it's not world-shattering. How may I relate to you? I may only relate to you on the basis of who you are and if you'll let me. Have you ever tried to talk to somebody who doesn't want to be spoken to? They do it quite easily. They walk away and leave you. I've done it repeatedly. I mean, I've had people walk away and leave me repeatedly. I watched a man speaking at an open-air meeting outside Woolworths 2 or 3 weeks ago, opposite the town hall. It didn't appear to me that anybody was listening to him. Now, he wished to communicate all right, and I think he wished to be in relationship, although he was saying such rude things to people on the way through. I wondered if he did want to be in relationship with anybody. But how does any person relate to any other person? You relate to me on the basis of who I am and what you know about me and whether I want you to relate to me. And if you want to be a friend of mine and I don't want you, you're battling and wiki worker. If I want to be your friend and you won't have me, we're finished. There's no way it can be done. On the other hand, it's no good you saying I'll relate to him on the way I like. I'm saying you won't relate to me on the way you like. You'll relate to me on the way I like. So if you do all the things that irritate me, there'll be no longer any relationship. In fact, the way we go about building all relationships is on the basis of discovering what we know about each other and cultivating them. Now, when Jesus says there is no way to come back to the Father but by me, he's not saying anything more startling than you and I already know about all relationships with people. The way in which I enter into relationship with you is on the basis of what you're like. And Jesus says, there's no way of you entering into relationship with the Father unless you know what the Father's like. And there's no way you'll know what the Father is like unless you meet him in me. Because when a man sees me, he sees the Father. And here is the crucial point. Supposing I'm at a party, and I'm holding forth with great gusto, like I am most of the time, and I choose on this occasion to hold forth with great gusto on the realm of the economic situation in Australia, for which there is wide scope for me to do that. I am putting forward my own political views with the normal gusto with which I do, and I'm saying what the government needs to do, and to act most rapidly, to repair the situation we're in at the present moment. Just imagine, and this will not be difficult for you to imagine, I'm sure, that I've been doing this at length for a good 20 minutes. A perfect stranger I'm speaking to, and then after a while it occurs to me that I might let him talk for a while, and so I say, what do you do for a living? He said, oh, I'm in the chair of economics at New South Wales. It is at that moment I clap into reverse. I'm desperately trying to think of what I might have been saying for the last 20 minutes. You see what happens once I get that piece of information. That piece of information says, if this relationship is to continue, I must not treat this man as my equal. In the realm of economics, he and I are not equals. He is a specialist and I am an amateur. There is no reason why we shouldn't have good relationships, but it will have to be on that basis. Nothing is more inane than to say that all people are equal. It is perfectly obvious at a cursory glance that that is not so. Who would want to be like me? Why, I would. I don't think there's anything wrong with me. What are you going on about? Now, we are not equal. In the realm, we've got all sorts of specialities. That we are equally important is beyond question, so far as I am concerned. But that is not to say that we're the same. And in the realm of relating to each other, we do it on the basis of our specialities. And once we move outside of those, relationships are strained. You've only got to work out in your own family when you're in a basis with your parents as to whether they are specialists on a given topic or you are. There's very little relationship taking place at that moment. And it's certainly not the sort of relationship you'd want to cultivate. You notice with small children and when it is time to go to bed, they behave like specialists and they tell their parents that they are amateurs in the realm of going to bed. The child says, I do not wish to go to bed. The parent says, you need to. He says, I am not tired. The parent says, you are tired. He says, I am not tired, while falling to the ground in a terrible tantrum and screaming. The parent says, it is because you are so tired that you are going on in this terrible way. He says, I am not tired, I am not tired, I know more about myself than you do. Says the parent, you do not know more about going to bed. I am a specialist, you are an amateur. The child says, I am a specialist, you are amateurs. And finally they hold his head on the pillow for a split second and he goes, Now, what am I saying? What am I saying? I am saying that in all relationships, me to you and you to me, it is when we discover where we are in the pecking order in any given area of life that you and I can proceed in good, open relationship with each other. Indeed, all new friendships are on the basis of, where do I stand vis-à-vis this subject with you? Now, I have great friendships with people who seem to outstrip me in every area of life. Good relationships, good, wonderful, valuable friendships. I would be an idiot, a complete idiot, if I pretended in those areas that I knew more than they. For it is just a plain, obvious fact that I do not. It doesn't make them better than me. It just makes them different. It doesn't mean we can't have friendship. We can. But if I presume to start telling them in the areas of their speciality that they are amateurs and that I'm a specialist, that good working friendship will be under threat immediately. Now, so it is with God. There is nothing different about relating to God than there is about relating to any other person. It's simply a matter of coming to terms with his speciality and living properly in relationship with it. Now, the way in which I relate to God is through the person of Jesus, because Jesus gives me accurate information about God. Without information about a person, I cannot enter into relationship with them. I do not know how to do it. That's why it's so difficult to relate to a bloke you meet in the bus stop. You do it fairly generally. Say, it's a great day, isn't it? Or, I think I'm getting the flu. Have you had it? Now, you wouldn't call that deep friendship, would you? That's fairly superficial. But that it is done on the basis of knowing about the person is indisputable. Supposing when the lecture is over, you have some sympathy for me. And you say, that poor man has been talking non-stop for such a long time, I'll get him something to drink. If this were possible to manufacture, you rush up to me with a cup of something that's piping hot and pass it to me. I say, thank you, that is particularly kind of you. Is it tea or coffee? You say, it is tea. I say, never mind, I can drink tea. I normally drink coffee, but I can, on occasions, drink tea. I say, I see you've put milk in it. I normally have it black. Never mind, I can drink it black. You say, I've put two sugars in it. I say, that is the end. I cannot drink it now. You see what you've done. You've aimed to do what is pleasing, but because you do not know, you haven't done it. You cannot tell God what he ought to be happy with, any more than you can tell me what I ought to be happy with, or I to you, to tell you what you ought to be happy with, and pretend that you and I'll have any sort of good-going relationship. It is you who must tell me what you're happy with, if you and I are entering into relationship. I'll then tell you whether I want to enter into relationship with you or not. That will be my prerogative. But it would be like my absolute impertinence to tell you what you like, especially without making any effort to find out. Now, when it comes to the area of God, Jesus says, I am the only way to the Father, because I am the only one who actually has got that sort of information to give. And John, in his gospel at the beginning, tells us of the speciality of Jesus, where a man may enter into relationship with him and so come into contact with God. And this is how John describes the speciality of Jesus, so that you might know how to enter into relationship with him. And that'll be a good, going, working, friendship-type relationship. That is the relationship I claim to have with God through Jesus. A good, working, day-to-day, friendship-type relationship. Like I can have, like I might, if you could stretch your imagination, be able to have with you. Now, on what is the basis that I enter into that relationship? This is how John begins his gospel. He says, in the beginning, the Word, which is obviously a synonym for Jesus. You'll see that when you get to the end of the chapter, and I don't have time to go into that now. He says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. Who better to give us first-hand information of the Father but the Son, who's been with him long enough? Who better to give us information about you than your parents or the person you're living with? Who better to give me information about you than somebody who's been with you all the time? Nobody's got better information about the Father than the Son, because nobody's been with the Father so long than the Son. And in the area of theology, the knowledge of God, Jesus happens to be a specialist. And if I'm going to enter into relationship with him, I've got to be on the basis of that speciality. It's no good me telling him that I know more about God than he does. It brings all that nonsense of I like to think about God, or I just like to worship God, or I just like... You have to pull your head in when you come to that point. He says, listen, if you're going to relate to us on the basis of our speciality. We really are specialists in the realm of theology. We may not be good specialists in every area, but in that area we are. And I relate to Jesus on the basis that what he says about God, he has got the drop on me. He happens to be a specialist in that area. I am an amateur. He said, in the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. In the realm of divinity, he happens to be a specialist. All things were created by him, and there was not anything created that he didn't create. In the realm of creativity, he happens to be a specialist. Now, I am greatly moved by creativity. I don't know if you've seen that beautiful constable that hangs in the Melbourne Art Gallery. It's called the Toll Gate. But I've never seen it that I haven't been moved. The lighting in it is so marvellous, so brilliant is it. You can just about warm your hands by it. Or have you seen that painting of McGubbin? What is it called? The Blue Lost Child, or the Lost Blue Child, or the Child Lost Blue? Well, it's one of those, I think. But when you look at it, you can smell the eucalypts. How is it that a man can create on canvas that thing which calls to life experiences which I've had in the bushland of Australia, so that in fact I think I'm in it? That is marvellous creativity. Now, those sort of things mightn't turn you on too much, but there'll be areas of creativity where you'll be turned on. I remember once going to a concert in the aftermath of the opening of the Opera House, and Lorraine Marzell came with the Cleveland Orchestra, and they gave a concert, and Birgit Nielsen sang at the end of it. Birgit Nielsen always looks like the back of a bus to me. I've never seen anything quite so big that rumbled on. I think it probably comes from singing Wagnerian operas all her life. But she was very Wagnerian. She came out and the orchestra began to play, and it was so loud. I thought, well, I've done my dough here. I'll never hear it. Nobody will be able to sing above that, that's for sure. And suddenly amid all of this, I was going to call it noise, music, a voice as clear as a bell and as loud as a cannon boomed out above the orchestra, and it soared on and it got louder and louder, and the orchestra got louder and louder, and I got carried up almost into a physical experience of this brilliant night. And I tell you, when it came to an end, if I'd had 20 hands, they would have been inadequate to clap. I clapped and clapped and stamped, and I bellowed at bravo and more, and an old lady in front of me looked around, and she was all snooty, and I said, bellow out yourself and don't waste time. It was absolutely brilliant. Now think of everything that's gone into that moment of creativity. That there was a man who 100, 200 years ago sat down and laboured over it with a pencil and a paper and maybe a piano, or just did it in his head, and wrote little dots on five lines and four spaces, or four spaces and five lines, whichever they are. And he might have, if he'd been like the Beethoven, who kept writing more and more and more overtures for his one opera, only one, and then was never satisfied, and was rewriting and rewriting it and rewriting it and rewriting it, so that when I go and hear Fidelio, it's a beautiful piece of creativity. How do I know how long it took to write the bloke? It only took her a quarter of an hour to sing it. But it's only taken her a lifetime of creativity to be able to do it. And there were 70 other blokes and guys all grinding away and doing their thing. And there was another bloke waving his arms around in another moment of creativity. All of that creativity all over and blown in a quarter of an hour. Let me tell you, that Jesus, the Bible's claim of Jesus, is that he is the author of creativity. He is not little. He is not little. And he will not be contained by me, that I might dare to tell him in the realm of creativity what is good and what is bad. In the area of creativity, he happens to have speciality. He says all things were created by him, and there was not anything created that wasn't created. I better get it right rather than go from memory. I have a bad memory. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. In the realm of life, he is its creator. That is where he has its speciality. It's no good me saying to him, I know better about life than you. He's saying, I'm sorry, pal. I have speciality in that too. That life is the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness is not able to overpower it. He is a specialist in the realm of morality. He has speciality in theology. He has speciality in divinity. He has speciality in creativity. He has speciality in living. He has speciality in morality. But there is no reason, in spite of that speciality, why I cannot have a good going friendship relationship with him. In fact, I claim to have just that. But I cannot have it if I do not understand the basis of his speciality and my amateurishness. My real trouble came when I tried to reverse the role, where I said to Jesus, I know better about theology and divinity than you, and proceeded to tell him exactly what God ought to be like. I lived in a fantasy world. I lived in the world of make-believe. I said, this is what God is like. But that God had no existence. The world of reality is the world where God is revealed in Jesus Christ. I claim to be an authority in my own life, and I claim to be an authority in morality, at least for me. I said, I know what is best for me, and I will do my own thing, and I will run my life in the way I like. And there is no possible way in which I can come into relationship with God if I continue to go like that. In fact, what happens in any relationship where I try to reverse the orders? It brings us immediately into conflict. To try and relate to God on the basis that he is an equal or that he is inferior to us is to actually be in conflict with the person who is there, which is exactly what the Bible says I am when I behave like that. When I tell God that he ought to be happy with me in the way I am, rather than him telling me that he is happy with me when we relate together on the basis of his speciality and of my non-speciality. However, let me say that if I go on fighting with God, he does not obligingly disappear. He still happens to be there. Any more than your parents don't disappear if you have a blue with them. They still happen to be there. You can pretend they're not. You know, that terrible non-stop, what do you call it, that sort of nothing given and everybody's in deathly silence, and the silence is more deafening than the harping. You'd rather they start to harp again than just leave you in the terrible silence. Till in the end you say, say something, will you? Anything will do. Just speak. They do not disappear. God still happens to be there. Now, Jesus claims to be the only one who knows God and therefore can tell us how to relate to God. But Jesus does something else, and I want to say it briefly and then leave time for a question or two. I never leave much time for questions, for an obvious reason. I'm indisciplined. You might have thought, so I don't want to answer them. That's not it. No, Jesus does something else which enables us to come back into relationship with God. He acts as a reconciler. See, supposing the bloke next door comes into me one day, he rushes in and it's terrible to do. He says, listen, John, I'll tell you what's happened. Jane's taken the car for the kids to ballet, and the dog's just been run over by a car. I wonder if you'd mind giving me a hand to take a dog down to the vet. I say, listen, Charlie, why don't you just drop dead? Right? Now, I'm saying, I would think that will put our relationship under some strain. Let us suppose the following day, Let us suppose the following day I decide that I will be his friend. So I just go and knock on the door and I say, "Hello, Charles, how are you? I thought you might like to come to the football this afternoon with me." I don't think that's going to work. No, something has got to be done which deals with that appalling behaviour. Now, my difficulty is I begin by telling God where he ought to get off. I tell him that I am a specialist in theology, that I am a specialist in divinity, that I am a specialist in morality, and that I am a specialist in life. I know better about life than he does, I know better about God than he does, I know better about me than he does, and I'm going to run my own life. But suddenly I come up against the person of Jesus. He does not disappear. He happens to be there, and I say, I ought to get into relationship with him. If he is the true and living God, I ought to do it. What about those terrible insults? Are they nothing? That I have strutted around like a peacock in God's world and told him where to get off? Jesus steps into the scene and acts as reconciler between man and God. And he does it by dying so that our sins can be forgiven. I don't have time to develop that, and I won't. But it is in Jesus, and in Jesus alone, that I get information about God and therefore can relate to him properly. I'm not talking about ideas. Your ideas are as good as me. Your philosophy of life may be even better than the Christian one if the person isn't there. But I'm suggesting to you that the person is there and he is not accommodating. He is as he is and he does not alter with my thinking. And Jesus gives us that information and is able to reconcile us back to God through his death. There is no other way than through him, but he says to the man who will come, on that basis they'll be received, they'll be forgiven, and they can enter into ongoing relationship. Do you want to ask a question? Only one way is to get to know the person. See, I say to you, you like to become a friend of my sister Jane? You say, you'd like it. Got a photograph of her? I say, well, actually, no, we've destroyed them all. I show you a photograph of Jane, and she's a slasher. You say, too right. I say, well, I ought to tell you one or two other things about her. You might get to know her. There's only one way to get to know Jesus. You've got to go to where he is. Where do you find him? You find him in the pages of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. There's where the investigation has got to take place. And I'm not very happy with people, so they're in the deep search for God. I say, have you ever tried reading the Gospels? They say, no. I say, it's like making a telephone call by sticking your head in the stove. It's ever so very hard to do. Where has God revealed himself? He has revealed himself in the person of Jesus. That's where the investigation has to be made. And you see, if it wasn't for the person of Jesus, you would discount his claims immediately. Just imagine a man saying, I am the only way you can get right with God. Just imagine me saying it. You wouldn't waste 5 minutes to stop and listen. Why is it that Jesus is believable? Well, read for yourself. That's where I'd go to. Matthew, Mark, Luke and John, take your pick. Mark's easiest, shortest, Luke's easiest. Would you like to follow that up? Now, I think that's a good question, and it's a question worth pondering on. I think that this is my whole problem in other religions, that when it comes to working out if it's true or not, I've got no basis to work it out on. Why isn't a Buddhist as right as a Mohammedan? If it's in the realm of ideas, I can't see how we can work out one from the other. It's just a matter of saying, well, if you like it that way, you have it. But once the person turns up, it seems to me to put it into a different category altogether. And that is why I think the person of Jesus needs to be investigated. Are his claims to being God well-founded? If they're not, what does it make him? Mad? Quite mad, I think. Or an unmitigated liar. There's not too much room for leeway there. And he is such an extraordinary person. I think that's why the investigation ought to be made at that point. But that he is talking about God is an idea, but that it comes through that person who claims himself to be the embodiment of everything that God is puts it into a different category, because we understand persons better than things. I think we even understand persons better than ideas. But that's another idea.